Good morning. Today is a Thursday. It's the 16th of March. Joining us this morning, who like guy that likes playing around with microphones, Paul Ziegler from Eureka City School. Stay. Good idea on that Fortuna education just rears its head at the most opportune times. Oh, good morning. Did you get a like short straw this morning or something?
No, I get a chance to come out and hang out with you for a little bit, so I won.
Oh, yeah, right. Now, did Fred tell you about the new book?
He did not.
Oh, well, okay. No, this is testing your trivia knowledge.
Oops.
So a little, it's just random words throughout the entire that we just kind of try to figure out how come. So why do we say someone sees red?
Oh,
no, no reference to McKinleyville or Ferndale on this one. Sorry, bud.
Or
SC. You're not playing yet, are you?
Is your blood's boiling? So something to do with blood?
If you see red once in a while, you're normal. Occasional anger is an ingredient in the mix we all call living. But do not rebuke yourself for a brief incident that makes you seem like a bull being taunted. That was the story circulated to explain why a show of temper is linked with red rather than with, say, purple or yellow. Tradition says that red banners, or clothing, are used by bullfighters in order to infuriate animals. There's no truth to the story, though it's been circulated for many decades. Scientific tests have shown that bulls pay no more attention to red than any other color. Which, I suppose if you're in the front row at the bull ring, you want to remember these things. White is not a guarantee of anything. It's the waving of the fabric, or the movement of the matador that catches an animal's eye and induces them to charge. At least one investigator says that the waving of a white cloth will enrage a bull even more, whoops, and more quickly than movements of a red cloth. Even if that's the truth, it won't affect our everyday speech. For generations to come, our descendants will still be saying that a person who indulges in a visible outburst of temper is seeing red.
If a bull's coming at me, I'm waving the white flag, and that's probably a bad thing.
I'm in trouble because you're going to outpace me. It's the old bear theory, right? Yeah, you have to be faster than the bear, just, yeah, faster than you. Oh, so what is the budget looking like out of the state for Eureka City Schools, public education in general? You know, you guys have always been kind of like the golden child, and for a lot of reasons for that. But when it gets into tough budget times, sometimes priorities change. What sense do you have, Paul?
Well, generally, schools get about 40% of the state budget. It's kind of baked into the process. Excuse me. And as we got our first look at the projected 2023-24 budget, it actually looked pretty good. That said, the Legislative Analyst Office, the folks who comment on what the state budget looks like, are starting to sound some of the alarms in terms of some of the headwinds that we're seeing with the economy right now. So just kind of wonky terms, our cost of living adjustment for 2023-24 is about an 8.13%. The state is trying to figure out if they can actually fund that full COLA increase or not, with a lot of other programs, one-time monies that are normal is coming down through the budget.
We used to call those Band-Aids?
Yeah.
One-time patch, and see if you can get there. 8% is a huge chunk, particularly when there's so many zeros and commas associated with the budget. Is it realistic to think that they'll be able to pull that one together? Or is this mandated that they must?
No, it's not mandated, in fact, but that's what the target is. So, the state or the governor with his original release in January signaled that the state's intention was to fully cover that COLA increase. Again, some thought that may not be the case, but it's probably going to happen, if it does happen, through a combination of ongoing dollars and one-time dollars just to kind of fill in the gaps. And what that really does, then, it calls into question the following year, 24-25.
So. Yeah, how steep is that fall?
Exactly.
Because I wouldn't suspect that all of a sudden we're going to see a huge upswing.
Don't think so.
Yeah, we saw a huge downswing pretty quick, or at least with the numbers, whether that was reflective accurately or not.
It's been a pretty turgid increase the last few years. In fact, for 2022-23, they actually did a COLA augmentation. So it was about a 13% increase from 21-22 to 22-23, another 8% on top of that. And then again...
Well, no wonder there's no money.
Well,
I mean, if you got a 20% bump,
Thank you for sending it our way. We all appreciate
that.
So, again, what happens, though, in that situation is you start to get used to those kind of increases. When the brakes get applied or you start slowing down, it causes all sorts of other issues. Couple that with the influx of the one-time dollars, the COVID and the ESSER funds, the relief funds that occurred both from the federal and the state perspective. And all of a sudden, you're seeing a real pump up of the budget that isn't sustainable over time.
Yeah, you feel fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah, for a little while.
And then all of a sudden, the next week hits.
Time to diet.
Yeah, yeah. I would think that the temptation, not being a union shop, but that the temptation is for a lot of folks to pounce and to attack, say, me. And we're seeing that in a couple of other areas here locally as well when there's rumors of money getting thrown around.
Sure.
How do you ameliorate that and back it off a little bit and maybe put some reality into the equation?
Well, I mean, it's difficult. If you look at what's happening with inflation, costs are rising for everybody. So are we able to keep pace in terms of meaningful wage? And we certainly try to be able to do that, both to be able to attract and retain the talent that we need to keep things going. That's an issue for everybody that's out there. I'll kind of take a little bit of a different jag on that. As we look from 2019-20 to where we are projecting at the end of this year, we've added about 70 full-time equivalent employees. So we generally have about 450, 500 FTE, and we're adding another 70 on top of that, a full-time equivalent. If you have two half-time people, that makes one
right.
FTE.
Now, is that being driven by enrollment or by legislation or by case law? Or by avoidance of the above?
It's not an enrollment issue. We are somewhere between flat and slowly decreasing in enrollment over the last 10 years. That's probably the same outlook that you have for the county. If you look statewide, certainly there is a decrease in enrollment. So that's not what's driving the equation there. Much of it has to do with the one-time dollars and the trying to get resources back into the classrooms, supporting students as they're coming back in after the pandemic, and some of the learning loss that happened there. And the other part of that then is some of the one-time funding for different programs that the state is espousing and putting resources behind right now.
Yeah, that phrase. okay, fine. We'll talk about the phrase when we come in.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian Coconut Water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's Homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Assistant Superintendent for Eureka City Schools, Paul Ziegler. Paul, before the break, you had used the phrase learning loss. And whether it's COVID or whether it's an extended vacation, I mean, you know, for us, when we were going through, it was either a family vacation or sports trips, right? Okay, you're out of the classroom for 3 or 4 days, and boy, some of the teachers thought that the world was coming to an end for us. And others said, go forth and enjoy, and we'll worry about it when we come back. Extend that, though, for a year or a little bit longer, things are a little bit different. And I know early on there was an argument, well, there's no learning loss because Zoom and all that kind of stuff. Now that there's been a year and a half after that, what has been the impact of this learning loss? I mean, is it a year? Is it a year and a half? Is it a little bit less? A little bit more? What kind of sense does everybody have about where the kids are now?
I think in terms of just the learning loss, the pure educational aspect of it, of course it's going to affect different students differently depending on what their circumstances are. What I think is being talked about right now, at least whatever that loss is, we're starting to see gains. Some of those gains...
Catch up,
yeah. Starting to close that gap. In large part because of the additional resources that we've been able to put into the classrooms, additional time for after school, summer school, all those type of things. So that's part of the catch-up process. But I think there's something beyond just the educational aspect, and that's the social aspect. We know that we have many students who, for instance, if somebody was in fourth grade when the pandemic hit, in essence lost that social time in fourth grade, that social time in fifth grade. Now they're coming into sixth grade, which is the middle school, without having some of those social skills and interactions and having been able to track that on a consistent basis forward.
Yeah, some of those foundational cornerstones that we
exactly.
all have growing up.
Exactly.
So with the academic catch-up, is that just throwing more I mean, when you said after school and summer school and homeroom, I mean, those are things that are very familiar for some of us on the, let's say, the far side of 50. And leave it there.
Right.
That's normal for us. Had those things kind of dissipated to such an extent that this is like reinventing the educational model to bring these programs back?
They never went away completely, but maybe the emphasis and the focus wasn't there, or the access for the number of students that we're now able to accommodate. So again, there may have been somebody who didn't need to go to summer school during the course of their normal education, and because of that lack of continuity through the time of the pandemic, it's very advantageous for them to get that additional time.
That's right, because when we were going through, it was fun classes. I can remember learning how to type.
There you go. Summer school was always kind of the add-on kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was a remediation. It was kind of, well, I guess like adult ed, exploration stuff.
Yeah, I remember summer school myself. I can still use these two fingers to type, so it's great.
Yeah, those were the little fingers, everybody. He didn't take full advantage of the opportunity there.
No.
And it would have been lost on radio anyway, so what the heck.
There we go.
So that has now expanded back. A little bit more for kids to just to be able to take classes. I would think that more time in the classroom is also helping to close the social gap a little bit too.
Sure, absolutely.
Is that being found to be the case?
Certainly. Yeah, getting kids back together, getting back to normal, whatever normal means, is certainly a good thing for kids.
I think the other thing that people have gotten excited about is PE classes. Yeah, we're it was so different. Well, it wasn't optional.
Right.
Now it certainly is, and the activity levels are, let's just say, different.
PE isn't optional, but you don't do it all 4 years, or necessarily have to do all 4 years the way that that we did growing up,
yeah.
I think. So,
it was a chance to build a GPA.
It's good to be able to pass PE, right?
Yeah. And really disturbing if you don't.
Indeed.
How different is the educational experience for the kids today than it was, let's say, 20 years ago, you know, when their folks were going through?
Boy, that's a really tough thing for me to answer.
Well, you've kind of been hanging around. You know, you know what's going on. I think there's a sense that it's so different today with the technology that's in the classroom.
Well, technology is certainly a part of that. Presumably, educational theory advances, and what we're doing now in classrooms presumably has been proven to be more effective than the way things were 20, 30 years. I don't know for sure if that's the case, but,
Well, math is
basis,
math.
You would think so. But certainly, 2 + 2 should still equal 4, but the ways that you teach that and the way that you get that information across to students is probably what has changed during that period of time.
Right. Now we have to have 2 + 2 and then we add them up. Tactile. Yeah. I guess for a lot of us, what we hear about education is in the news and the commentary and the talk shows, and it ain't that positive. I mean, it's not, or comforting, it's not consistent. But I think a lot of that's driven out of the state, isn't it? Some of the edicts and the mandates that come out?
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of local control that happens with that as well. One thing I think I would say is probably different from the way that things were 20 years ago is a lot more differentiated education, which means that you're trying to give each individual student the chance to learn in the way that they learn best.
So customized a little bit, yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Ziegler from Eureka City Schools. Paul, as you look at the investment in the classroom, I guess it was when did the COVID thing start?
March 2020.
It was 2020. So, okay. So it's been 3 years. Mm. A lot of investment in technology in the interim.
Yes.
Now we're coming to the period where maintenance and reinvestment is starting to occur. Are the dollars there for that, or is this going to be kind of a temporary blip and now things are going to be better, but they're not going to be as extensive as what they were in the past?
Great question, and I think if you think about technology, there's probably two aspects of it. One is the infrastructure. I think that most districts have had the opportunity to fortify their infrastructure, and to a great extent, those are going to be not necessarily one-time expenditures, but dollars that have been committed and will last for a period of time before there need to be the ongoing upgrades attached to that. So districts should be aware of that, should be putting the dollars aside as they're able to plan for that. The other part of that is a little bit more disposable, consumable, and for instance, Eureka City Schools has gone to a one-to-one platform with our Chromebooks. Chromebooks generally...
Okay, slow it back up.
Okay.
One-to-one platform. Which
so
means
that means that each student has a Chromebook assigned to them.
Okay. Now you haven't talked over the host.
Okay, sorry about that. And in the upper grades, the students take their Chromebooks home with them so they can do their homework at home. And in the lower grades, those are staying in the classroom. But again, the ratio is one device for each student.
Now, if there are some families where they have the full-blown laptop, are the kids encouraged to use that rather than taking one of the Chromebooks, or do they now have two laptops?
You know, I don't know the answer to that one. I suspect that I think that most students are taking their Chromebooks home. Those that are using them outside the classroom.
Because I know I'm a. I think I'm an aging dinosaur. I don't think I'm just a dinosaur. I think I'm an aging dinosaur. I don't trust the cloud. Hmm. I want the stuff in my computer because we just have had too many instances when things go sideways.
Yeah.
Okay, or the connectivity isn't there, or power goes out, or. Mm-hmm. And I just like the surety of having it there. And the same goes with my email, though, too. And I'm told that, you know, not having a Google account is like sacrilegious. It's like, well, okay, call me a heathen. I'm okay with that.
I think we may be of the generation where that isn't a second nature for us.
Yeah, well, and I don't really care about what people label me either, so you put the two together. it's just interesting how this is now becoming mainstreamed with everything, and the communications with parents are all driven through this. And instead of, I guess, you know, take the stuff home to mom and dad. Mm. How are the parents reacting to all this stuff, those that you're able to have contact with? Is this similar to what they want? Is this so different because it's not textbooks anymore and it's not bringing workbooks home and being able to sit down and help out the kids with their homework. Have we gone beyond that now?
I look at technology as pretty much the same as a textbook, just a different delivery method. So I think in terms of looking at homework and students' ability to get help from their parents and their family, probably at the same level that it was, whether it be a textbook that you're bringing home, saying, hey, mom, dad, sis, brother, I need some help with this, and the willingness or ability of the family to help out in that regard. And now we've just replaced that with a device, you know, an online device.
Well, that ability thing comes up again, huh?
Sure.
Yeah, it was tough for me to help out the kids based on my ability. Had nothing to do with technology. It was pure ability and lack thereof.
I was a pretty good student and did well in school, but there was a certain point when my kids were bringing stuff home. I don't remember that stuff anymore. There's only so much help that mom and dad could provide at that point.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that's why, maybe technology has opened some of those resources, the ability to find other ways to get support. The ability to find an online tutor and to be able to provide services in that regard. So I think it's a plus. You asked about resources and planning and the like, and started to say Chromebooks generally have a 5 to 6 year life, but they don't always make it that long when they're in students' hands. And that's not the students are abusing them necessarily, some probably do, but just the wear and tear of bringing them back and forth and having them in their backpack and all those type of things just make it a little bit more difficult to manage, and therefore it becomes another burden or another aspect of our budget that we need to be aware of and planning for as we go forward.
So how many of these things are there that are out there in Eureka City Schools? How many Chromebooks are there?
So we have about 3,600 students, so we probably at any given time have about 5,000 Chromebooks, just to be sure.
Oh, even the really little ones, first graders get them too?
TK.
Or use them?
They do. I believe we're now, I said one-to-one, so one-to-one from kindergarten up, each student having their own device, and then our TK and kindergarten classes, pods of probably 10 or so. So they're not yet one-to-one at that level, but we're moving in that direction and we will get there.
What do the teachers have?
Teachers have, they generally will have a Chromebook as well as a desktop computer as well.
So they have the same implement, so to speak, rather than the one that has all the answers in it, so to speak, like we used to.
They'll have a higher level machine.
Again. Okay, but it's still comparable.
Comparable, sure.
So what's your budget number for these things every year? I mean, if you're having to replace a third, roughly.
So we're putting aside our reserve calls somewhere between probably about $400,000 a year, not just for Chromebooks, but for as we're replacing our desktops, our laptops, and the like. So just I'd say $400,000 to $500,000 a year.
Just IT?
Yeah.
Stuff? Yeah. Is that a big, I know it's a big chunk. Is it a big chunk of the budget, or is it just a small percentage?
That's kind of a relative question, but our annual budget generally is in the $55 million range. We're above that right now.
Okay, so you're not having to hold your breath to set aside that percentage.
Yes and no. Could it be used in other places? So it's always a question of priorities. Where do you want to put your resources? What do you want to support? And we know that if we don't put those dollars aside on an annual basis, let's say we don't do that for 5 years, all of a sudden there's a $3 million ticket that you have to handle as opposed to a $500,000 one coming at you. And that's where the surprises can really build up and cause you some harm.
Is there much difference between the content as well as the hardware from 3 years ago to what you're buying, or I guess placing the orders now for this fall? Are the machines more robust? Are they pretty much the same thing? It just, it was made a couple of years later?
So again, I look at machines as a delivery medium, kind of like a textbook is. So the machines generally are becoming less expensive over time. That's the good news. I don't know they're becoming any more robust or last any longer.
Or durable,
That's a perfect word for it. Individual users will have different approaches and get different results. So what I think the question beyond that is, what does curriculum look like? And presumably, in an online situation, you're able to provide a more robust level of curriculum and give students the ability to access it from different angles, if you will. Call it three-dimensional as opposed to just something that's on the page, which kind of is two-dimensional.
Right, right. So the textbook, or what used to be the textbook manufacturers, are on board with this, and they're understanding that this is now what we're doing?
And they're doing both. They're continuing to put out the traditional textbook.
Do you have to buy textbooks?
We do.
So this is in addition to rather than a replacement of?
Right. So oftentimes you'll have your textbook, but then there will be an online component that can augment that, as well as some programs that are just straight online. So combination of things.
So it might be perceived as a replacement of the workbook, if there was a workbook?
That's probably a good analogy.
Okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:50. We're back talking shop this morning. A couple minutes with Paul Ziegler from Eureka City Schools. So, Paul, the budget overall this year is looking, okay. To use that technical term. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to incorporate that going forward. I think right now for us, and I think for most schools, at this point in time, things are looking good. And again, it's that funding cliff or weaning yourself from the dollars that you've become accustomed to over the last couple of years. This is going to be the real challenge as we move forward.
With the pressures for adding more and more technology, we didn't even talk about virtual reality. Okay, now that's an experience. That's an opportunity for kids to do things that may not otherwise be able to in the classroom setting. But that's not a cheapie. So as there are pressures either through the educational community, through the, through the board, through the general public, for those types of things, can you see a train wreck coming up where they say, we want to have, and now you're having to pull monies from other areas and shunt them into these areas that so far are not even a budget item?
Well, we're trying to look as far down the road as we possibly can. I don't have any idea what's going to be coming at us next, but I don't think it's a whole lot different than curriculum adoptions, as the way that we provide content to our students changes over time. We have to keep on top of that. So this just sounds like another version of that very same process that we're having to deal with right now.
So with those pressures and realities, how do you prioritize? I know Fred's got his big list. Okay, fine. You got your one point. Make it balance. Okay, within that, do you have guidelines to work off of, or is so much of it fixed, either with union contracts or existing contracts for resources, that you're massaging, but you're not massaging the whole beast? You got about 10% that you're playing with.
We go into it with some costs that are given. That's your baseline. You hope that you continue to get the increases on an annual basis to do the additional things that you want. We say all the time in schools and in school finance, we can do anything we want, but we can't do everything we want. So it really comes down to how do you want to prioritize and utilize your resources. And much of that is driven by our strategic plan, which is the board's direction for the organization.
Do you get to have a speaking part in those retreats?
Well, I'm certainly there, and I'm asked questions along the way, and oftentimes it's, what does that look like on a fiscal basis? Can we do both these things, or is it an either-or type of a situation?
I would suspect it's the latter rather than the former.
Oftentimes.
Yeah. Let's see you again.
Thanks. You
All
as
right.
well.
Say hi to what's his name when you see him.
I will do
All so. Right. See everybody else tomorrow.